we take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And I have to admit, I am feeling a little teary-eyed tonight because we started a journey, Ben and I, back on November 10th, year 2010.
Good heavens!
2010, November 10th, 2010.
Is that when we started this?
Yes, that is.
Holy smokes!
The first episode of UFO was on that date published, and by the time our listeners hear this, it will be probably January of 2015.
Wow!
So we've been plowing through Gerry Anderson's UFO for a considerable length of time, but tonight
more time than the series lasted.
But tonight we are definitely coming to a sad conclusion to this
epic show,
cult British TV series today. I love so much.
I think once we're done, I'm going to have to go down for a long sleep.
Which, oddly enough, as segues go, is the name of tonight's episode.
Imagine that.
The long sleep. I mean, we've got to the end here, and I'm I'm choking up. No, I'm not really choking up.
It's a peanut that you ate.
It was actually something caught in my throat. But, I did enjoy this show, even though it's got its flaws.
It had its weak moments, but when it was strong, it was strong.
So does it go out on a bang, or does it simper and snivel its way with a whimper? Must be
you
nighttime.
Guess.
It must be nighttime. Well, synopsis of the story. Straker is informed that a 10-year-old case has been reopened because the victim of a car accident has woken up after a 10-year coma. And yes, Straker was the person who ran over the person who was in the coma. It's a young woman, Catherine, and she doesn't know 10 years has passed. Her family are all dead. Straker is the only one she has. And as she opens up to him and tells him her fantastical tale of aliens planting a thing in a barn while she's on a trip of some kind of the drug-induced nature, Straker becomes increasingly worried that they might be planning to destroy all of England. Her dead boyfriend, who she only met one day, 10 years ago, comes back to help the aliens find the thing, and they don't. Well, they do, but then they stop them, and there we go. I didn't have a chance to summarize the episode really properly, so it's, you just watch
really?
It yourself. Watch it yourself, yeah. I think I got the gist of it though. It said there was hippies and drugs and psychedelic colors.
A bomb.
A bomb. Oh yes, a big bomb. Very big bomb. And we think, yeah, we do, because it did finally blow up in the end, ending the series in a catastrophic explosion. So I think you may have tipped your hand, but what did you think of this episode?
This is a rather unusual episode, but not in a grand way. It's kind of a whimper. I mean, I feel really perplexed by this one. I really don't quite know how I feel about it. That's what has me completely just really stunned. I walked away from it thinking, well, okay, this one was a little odd, but I felt like odd. That's as good as I can get with it.
They have had a couple episodes here and there where they've kind of, you know, gone different routes in the story. And this one's first off, I mean, we're back to the aliens' wacky plan. I mean, we'll get to that. But I mean, here's another episode of what the heck
were
they thinking?
What are they up to?
What are they thinking? And how long are they willing to wait for them to... But we'll get to that. But this one is told largely through flashbacks, which are sepia toned,
except for the drug trip.
Except when they're stoned, yeah. In which case, then it's proper colors with some extra Christmas tree lighting or something going on. I guess we could call it a time waster in a way, because, you know, it's like, oh, and then we were in the city, and then we went to the zoo, and then we were at Piccadilly Circus, and then we decided to go out into the country, and all of that was, you know, her painting this picture and trying to, so in a way it was kind of natural, because Dr. Jackson, who was giving one of his weirder performances.
Oh, he was really dark and creepy today.
There's lots of
Was Peter Lorre at one point.
Yeah, he was really given the, he was given the odds. Yeah.
Well, there was a lot of that. A lot of his dialogue was looped. So, of course,
yes,
that
it was,
did not
badly
help matters any. And when it was, he was very much giving the Peter Lorre affect in an incredibly strong way.
And yet he was being good Dr. Jackson.
Oh, he was very good Dr. Jackson. He wasn't whacked out Dr. Jackson like we saw earlier in the season.
Yeah.
Although he was a little creepy-ish, stalker-ish kind of sort of when he's comforting Catherine by stroking the side of her head.
I managed to miss that.
It was right after Stryker. Stryker.
Strucker. Yeah. Right after Stryker struck her. And
when Stryker was in the room and she first wakes up and sees him for the first time, she's all panicked. Stryker walks out, and then from the hall, you're able to look through the little window in the door, and you see Jackson at the side of the bed, and he has his hand on the side of her face, and he's just tenderly stroking it, and it's like, ew.
Hmm. I think I was watching the faceless back of the head that was watching Stryker in that shot.
Yeah, well, that faceless back of the head, because it was faceless, was really not doing a whole heck of a lot for me. So I my eyes went to where the action was.
So the first thing we'll talk about here is Stryker getting interested in this woman?
You know, I kind of felt he was, and I'm wondering if that isn't just some sort of guilt complex kind of thing going on.
Because he ran her over, and we never did really get a good explanation of why it happened to be Stryker that was the guy who ran her over. I'm guessing that Stryker was there investigating a UFO 10 years ago, and that he was driving down the country lane, and she ran in front of his car and hit her, and that's how that happened. But otherwise, it's the most amazing of coincidences that could possibly be. No, it must have been because they already had an open file. So they must have been down there investigating the UFO. Okay, so that's fair enough. He was just on site and they were collided with it. So when Jackson comes to Stryker and says, you know, she doesn't know anything about, she thinks the accident happened yesterday. Her parents are dead. She doesn't know that. You're the only person in the world, and it would really help if you could get her to remember things, because it would stimulate her mind and help her improve. And so Stryker goes in, and she freaks out because she noticed in the 2.5 seconds that he smacked her with a completely different haircut. In a moment of her terror, she remembers him.
It was his eyes.
Yeah, but he wasn't even wearing the eyeliner back in the 1970s shot. So, well, who knows? It was in sepia tone. But then, you know, Jax is like, no, you're all she's got. You're it. So he goes back and they seem to be forming a bond, because she asked for him to come back. And then he comes back the next day and the next day. And at one point, he's got her out in the garden. She's in the wheelchair, and she finds out, she's found out her parents are now dead, and that her family's all dead. And he's like, do you have any cousins? No. Do you have any schoolmates? No. Do you have any this? And he said, no, I'm all alone in the world. And he says, Catherine, when this is all over, and she goes, thank you. And I'm like,
yeah.
Is he asking her out a date?
It sounds like he was making an offer that she would not want to refuse.
I really couldn't tell if that was...
I couldn't read it. It was very... it was vague, but, I mean...
I hate it when they intercept... I hate it when they cut them off. I go, oh, I know what you're talking about. Thank you. It's like, no, excuse me, audience didn't...
We don't! I mean, we can only make some guesses here, and we're either going to be right or we're going to be wrong, but we don't have enough to kind of go on.
I mean, I think the only thing we've got to go on is the fact that Straker is a miserably lonely man whose life is in tatters.
Emphasis on miserable.
Yeah, and he's, here's some damaged goods. He can, that's unfair. But here's another woman who's all alone in the world. She's all alone, he's all alone.
But in a way, you're right. She is, at the moment, she is damaged goods, which means that Straker's really got some serious codependency issues.
But he did say when it's over. So he is
get define
of,
over.
Yeah, question. Well, now we know.
Yeah, it's pretty much over now. Oh, sorry, gave the game away.
And so that was... So in a way, this episode is kind of character development on Straker.
Because largely.
He is...
He's the central character
nice
in this.
To her, and he seems to be... He seems to care because... Yeah. You know, he comes back, he's befriending her, which is not something we've really seen Straker do previously. We've seen him kind of try to take advantage of the reporter woman, and of course he's had his troubles with his ex-wife, but this is really the first time we've seen somebody outside of Shadow that he kind of seems
to really care
with.
For.
Yeah.
I mean, he's definitely protective of her.
Mm-hmm.
He appears to have her best interests at heart, and it shows that it does go a little bit beyond the professional.
But then remember, he had his son's interests at heart too, and his son didn't make it out of it alive. So,
well, Straker's just a doomed man.
Yes, I think that's true. So she recounts this story about how she was run away from her home and she was just trying to find her space, man, and met up with this guy named Tim, who's a dropout medical student, bit of a hippie. They spend the day together in London, then they go out to the country to some place he knows, and it's an old farmhouse, and they go to the farmhouse and they're doing a little bit of making out, maybe a little bit more, hard to tell, and... then he pops some pills. And it was an interesting scene because she was clearly not into the drug scene.
No.
And he was because, you know, I mean, that's just...
He had to talk her into it.
Yeah. Oh, no, don't worry. They're not addictive. It's habit forming and they won't harm you. I'm a medical student. I mean, after all, so I should know, right?
I am a professional.
So she pops the pills. It's an interesting window on... Late 1960s, early 1970s.
Yeah, flower power, dropout kind of atmosphere. Yeah.
And then once they've done that, then that's when the aliens arrive.
That's right. Because that's when the ship lands, yes.
Yeah, how did the aliens... never mind. I was gonna say, the ship lands after, just before, I think, they take the drugs. And then... So
I don't know. It seemed to land in color, so I'm thinking it happened after they took the drugs.
Wasn't there one other... There was one other scene that... There was something odd about that. I think we were still in sepia. It landed in color, and then it went back to sepia, and then the drugs kicked in, and then everything went color. So I don't know whether that's just because they were using stock footage and they got it wrong, or they edited it in the wrong order, or what the case was. But anyway, there was something
a little off,
as I recall.
If the nature of the color, or lack thereof, is supposed to be an indication of the point of view or a time reference, then yes. The ship landing in color, if they're still in sepia tone, would be out of context.
Somehow, while they're... And I'm utterly oblivious to these things... But apparently, when whatever pills he gave her, you take, you see in color. And then
isn't that nice?
You run around and dance. And
laugh
and
a lot.
Fling bicycles and laugh a bunch. Yeah. I guess I'm just not getting the appeal to the whole drug culture thing, apparently.
No, it's
Maybe
not.
That's why I was...
No, and I already see in color anyway. At least I believe I do, so...
Subjective. You don't really...
That's true, but... it doesn't appear to be sepia tone, so I'm going to assume I'm okay, and I don't need the drugs in order to see in any more color.
Anyway, there's two aliens down in the basement of this old farmhouse digging a hole and burying this bomb-like thing. Well, a cylinder thing. Let's not call it a bomb-like thing. Nobody would guess it was a bomb in a million years.
Not,
I mean, except
in
Straker,
the
obviously, who only heard a brief description of it and knew it was a bomb.
And are these aliens, are they like the Keystone Cops or the Abbott and Costello of the UFO aliens? Are they on some sort of a punishment? It's like, okay, you two losers, go to Earth, plant this thing, dig a hole, and just plant this thing, and stay out of everybody else's ways, because you two knuckleheads are just worthless.
Yeah, they were, yeah. So Tim and the girl steal something from the thing because they think it's a game, because they don't realize that the aliens are aliens. And so the aliens are chasing them, and they're running around dancing and laughing and having fun and running up on the roof. And then Tim falls dramatically to his death after taking a bow. The girl hides the missing piece, and then they knock her out, and then they drag the body off, and she decides to escape. So she's running. So, and here's one of those filler moments. I mean, yeah, it was filler when they were in the city and they were kind of getting around, but then she's picked up by somebody on the road and he drives her away.
Yeah.
Filthy old perv.
Yeah, and he's out to have his way with her after a while. And like that really was filler. It served zero purpose except to take up time.
It got her running in front of Straker's car. But she could have been running in front of Straker's car
just from panic over what happened.
Yeah. So it was like, I think they're killing time. And, well, once again, terrible things happen to people all the time. Is that the dangers of hitchhiking? Is that why you don't do it? I mean, in the 60s and 70s, we're always like, oh, don't go hitchhiking because this pervy old farmer guy is going to have his way with you.
Yeah, so it's not just, you know, sex, drug, and rock and roll. It's sex, drugs, rock and roll, and hitchhikers.
Yeah, exactly.
So, being picked up by, you know, being a hitchhiker and being picked up by a driver is also, I guess, very counterculture.
Probably is, actually. Yeah. Probably is. I don't know. 60s. Anyway. As Ben points out, the aliens were completely ineffectual at capturing Tim. Even though they were all, and I will give them this, they were climbing up on the roof of that building. And that was a real roof and a real building.
Yep.
And they were in their spacesuits. And I think I can say quite safely from experience, and in fact, I know one person who knows more experience about this than me, and that is Ben. That you put somebody on a roof in a spacesuit costume, you don't run around.
No.
Because your vision's impaired.
Fall.
And
Yeah. You tend to be very careful.
So I was kind of impressed at how far they were willing to go, but why did they go into the basement to bury this thing? Why didn't they just bury it in the field?
Well,
why did they bury it in the first place? Because at the end, it's obvious that what detonates it
is light.
Is sunlight.
Yeah.
So burying it indoors doesn't seem like the most natural place if you wanted to detonate. I would try something. Bury it at night.
And then get away.
And then leave before sunrise. Or better yet, why bury it if sunlight is, I don't think burying it 6 inches in the ground is getting it close enough to the Earth's crust to cause the earthquake.
And, I mean, we really have no idea what kind of repercussions that explosion would cause. We have a view of the ship that is carrying the bomb into space. And if we're going to kind of use that as some sort of a scale, that explosion does not look like it would be enough to split Britain in half.
And the whole idea of splitting Britain in half is completely out of left field. Straker uses this argument. What happened to Turkey in 1970? And then Foster goes, well, there was an earthquake and 84,000 people were killed. It says, that was 3 days before there was a UFO seen at that same location. That was 3 days before these creatures were seen planting the bomb.
So is that supposed to be a means for a widespread harvesting?
I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
It's the only thing I can figure.
We need a lot of bodies lying around, and we just hop a bunch of UFOs in while they're down there, and then we'll harvest the bodies.
It's all I can figure.
I have no idea. Once again, it's like you know, the worth, Britain's in jeopardy, these aliens. But they're not being true to their remit, if you will.
When are they ever true to their remit? That's the problem. I mean, every time we turn around, they have a completely, it's not just a different strategy. It's a totally different approach that makes you think their endgame is something that it was the week before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're always guessing and always trying to figure out what do they really want? We never really know. I mean, first we think initially it's all to harvest, and then you know, thanks to Dr. Creepy, we find out that's not really entirely the case, because guess what? They're human. So now that throws that whole thing up in the air, and now we've got this whole bit about trying to create massive earthquakes. For what end? I mean, it makes absolutely no sense. And the fact that we're looking at something that took 10 years earlier really makes you question what
they couldn't
is
have,
the motive.
They couldn't have gone all the way back to the home planet, got a new detonator, and come back and planted it again. Instead of, they take Tim's body and leave him apparently waiting for the girl to come out of the coma.
Hey, but remember, these are the Abbott and Costello of the aliens. These two are not the brightest bulb in the pack.
No, they're not. Very few people were in this one. So, of course, Streaker's got Foster hunting all over, trying to find a farmhouse that was there 10 years ago at a place where the girl can't remember and didn't really know in the first place and only was there one day on a sort of whirlwind drug-induced tour. Which is a problem that the alien has, or not the alien, but the zombie boy has, because she can't remember. So he gives her a drug, and the drug makes her remember everything. And so that sends him off. So she remembers what she did with the stick, okay? She's running along, and she comes to a bridge over a canal, and she flings it over the edge of the canal into the water, but oops, it lands in the storage compartment of a houseboat.
An abandoned houseboat.
Not an abandoned houseboat.
Well, kind of. I mean, no one's living in it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an owner, but, well, you saw it. It's in terrible shape.
It was in terrible shape 10 years later when he was lying there dead and his mailbox was out front.
Yeah.
That's what they look like. I think that's what they look like, houseboats.
Yeah, I've seen them much better.
I mean, considering that he had a mailbox, and I really don't know, maybe Simon or somebody who's in Britain, or actually I could ask my friend, because he did a documentary on canals and houseboats in the UK.
What, not about fish?
No, about canals and houseboats and longboats. Longboats? Not longboats. Something like that. Anyway. Do you buy a spot along the shore and say, yep, this is my...
I guess
this is my location.
I think you can, because David Gilmour of Pink Floyd did that. That's his home, and his recording studio are in a very, very big houseboat, and I think it's parked in the Thames.
I know that, you know, people do live in houseboats, and they have all this the canals, and there's lots of people who live in them, but I didn't know whether they were transitory or whether they were fixed in place. But this implies that obviously for 10 years that houseboat has sat there, and nobody's noticed this alien technology that got flung down into the thing. Or maybe he did notice and he kept it on his mantelpiece and didn't just throw it away with the trash. Tim comes back and kills the owner and takes the thing and goes back to the barn and starts planting the explosive to complete the job. Now, this is where the Straker non-Straker part comes up. Dr. Jackson, Paul Foster, Straker are all around the girl's bed, and she just can't remember what she told him. She knows she told him everything, but she just can't remember it. And so Foster looks down at the needle of the medicine he left behind that caused her to talk, and he's like, use this. And Jackson's like, I don't know what that medicine is. I cannot medically use that. It's
not in good conscience.
Not in good conscience. And Foster's like to Straker, and Straker hesitates. Oh, he asks what happened to her, and you know, well, her heart rate's doubled, and it's even still quite high. And Straker hesitates, and Foss says, "We've got to use it. We've got to use it. It's the only way we're ever going to find this, or this whole country is going to be blown up." And finally, Foster makes the command decision and hands it to Jack to give her the drug.
Yeah, Foster became Straker for a moment.
Yeah. Yeah, and Straker couldn't do it. I think Straker tolerated it, but isn't that kind of the same way he did with his son?
I was thinking the exact same thing.
It's like he gave the command to keep the kid alive, but then when Freeman, not knowing that, countermanded it to do something UFO-related, Straker didn't stop it. And that's kind of what he's done here. He's afraid that the girl's going to die, and he's obviously emotionally invested.
But he doesn't want to be...
He can't stand in the way, yeah.
No, he can't stand in the way, yeah.
So they get the information, and they stop. Well, they don't stop Tim. He gets the bomb activated, and then he goes off and dies in a weird vampire Dracula kind of way. In fact, I'm sure that's stolen from a Christopher Lee film where...
I believe it was.
Fallen off of a castle and lands on a...
I thought it was a windmill.
Oh, could it? You know, that sounds right. Lands on some wood, spikes him,
yeah.
Turns into a skeleton, which makes... Well, two things make no sense whatsoever. Well, one, that he would turn into a skeleton when he dies. But when his clothes change...
His clothes change back to the way he was before he was taken.
And then he turns into a skeleton. That... What?
Yeah. Huh?
That is just trippy. So then they bring in the... they bring in the bombs... squad, and they can't drill through this bomb. They don't know what kind of bomb it is, and eventually they fly it into space after they discover that sunlight's what detonates it, and Earth is saved. Yay.
Again.
And then this is the other weird part.
Thank you.
Foster heads back to the hospital. Colonel Lake is there. She's crying. She tries to tell first off, Foster comes back, and she doesn't tell him what it is, but he runs up. You know, it's obviously something with a girl. He runs up to the room. Then Straker comes back. She tries to tell him something. He runs up to see the girl. Now, obviously, what we're meant to think is that the medicine killed her.
Right.
And indeed, when they get there,
she's dead.
But she's dead from old age. And it's not because of the medicine.
Mm-mm.
It's because the aliens apparently took her youth to give it to Tim to revive him so that he could
stand sentry, essentially.
And then when he died, she aged to death, too. Which not only does that not make any sense whatsoever, but it doesn't make any sense
whatsoever. No sense at all. None. I played that scene 3 times thinking, did I miss something? You know, I thought, no, I didn't miss anything.
And here's another one. What could have caused that? I don't know. And I wouldn't want to know either from Jackson. It's like, it's something, you know, this is just too horrible for me to even contemplate. I don't want to know how that happens. Like, thank you, Mr. Scientist.
That's a bad hand wave.
I'm not sure why. Why did they do that? Was it so that Straker didn't have to have any guilt? So Foster didn't have to have any guilt because it would have happened no matter what. So it didn't matter. It seemed to, I don't know, it kind of minimizes the impact in a way.
Yeah.
In a strange way.
I know, and that's part of why I feel so odd, and that's odd as an ODD, about this episode. I'm not entirely sure how to emotionally react to this, because it's just so odd.
Yeah.
As you're right, it makes absolutely no sense at all, to the point where I literally just cannot wrap any part of my brain around it.
I as you just said, I had to go back and watch that scene again. I had to, when I got to the end of it, I'm like,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
And I ran it back and watched it again. It's like, okay, hey, it's alien plot. They don't have to make sense.
Doesn't have to make any sense whatsoever. Yeah, that's the cheapo hand wave.
And so Straker leaves the hospital a lone man, and Colonel Lake chases after him, commiserating with him. And that is how they walk off into the sunset for the series.
Yeah.
Now, on Twitter, earlier today. This is how this works. We record today, which is sometime in December, and you hear it later. But I tweeted out earlier that I had just finished watching the episode, and I got some Twitter feedback from one of our followers, Impact Suspect, and he is appears to be German, from the fact that most of his tweets are in German, which I can't read. But he
Google
said,
Translate.
Yes. And he said that the German version of UFO, when they aired this, they dubbed over lines right at the end saying something to the effect of, well, we probably won't see anything from the UFOs anymore because they knew it was the end of the show and they wanted to close it off.
So they're saying that for whatever reason, the UFOs decided that they were done?
That's it. We finished it. We solved that one.
We
That's
won.
It. We won. Woo.
Let's party.
I can't even, I mean.
I can't wrap my head around that one either.
Exactly. It's like, all
what?
Right.
Hey, man. How do they come to that conclusion?
It makes as much sense as trying to figure out what the aliens were doing trying to earthquake Britain. So, they left us on a bit of a mystery on that.
And not a cliffhanger, no.
Hey, he tweeted that out and I read it and I have no reason to doubt him.
Oh, but no reason at all.
I have no reason to doubt him at all. But I thought, you know, it'd be nice if I had some secondary source. So I went to the great font of all knowledge, the internet, and I started searching around. And of course, I'm equally impressed once again with the fact that unfortunately, the name UFO is not sufficiently keywordy enough to get you past all of the junk that Google comes up with when it comes to UFOs.
I wonder why.
And so I couldn't confirm it. Let's put it that way. And if you put in like UFO German ending or something, then you'll get UFO German UFO sightings and
right.
things like that. So I didn't.
That's no help.
I didn't come across it, but I went back through after all this time. I went back through the Wikipedia entry and I went through the website I mentioned a couple of episodes, UFOseries.com, that has a lot of information on it. And I stumbled across a fascinating piece of information that has nothing to do with this episode at all, but it's kind of funny. Now, what's the name of our son?
Well, we call it Saul.
Yeah, we call it Saul. And we have in many episodes extrapolated that Saul, sun, light, speed of light is why they measure it, right?
Like Saul 3 would be 3 times the speed of light. That's
speed
that's what we would...
of light.
Yeah.
S-O-L.
Oh, my God.
I read that.
Wow.
Like, wow, do I feel stupid.
Yeah, I feel like a real idiot all of a sudden. Why didn't I see that one?
I don't know why I jumped to assuming that was the sun. Sol, solar, speed, something like that. I just... There you go.
Oh, okay. So... Well, we were technically right in our
we know that every time it made no sense and we said, but if this really is speed of light times 3, then this doesn't work. We were right. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. But when they were saying Sol 3, that's what they meant.
Three times the speed of light. Yes.
I mean, we just, how we got to that conclusion was totally different, but at least we arrived at the same conclusion. Speed of light, huh? Wow.
Speed of light.
Okay.
Who knows? Maybe it is Saul, and the guys who wrote up Wikipedia or the website just said,
maybe
oh,
they're
Saul
wrong.
Light. Maybe they.
Maybe they're wrong.
Yeah, we'll go with that one. So then the other thing is apparently, if Wikipedia can be believed, which, you know, sometimes it can be believed, it was almost 2 years from the time UFO was filmed to the time it aired in the United States.
Sounds about right.
So when it aired in the United States, initially, the ratings were really good. And so this is the point 2 years down the line when Gerry Anderson was given the commission to make Series 2 of UFO.
Mm-hmm.
With the remit that, you know, we liked the space-based, moon-based stories. And so Gerry Anderson's idea there was that there are, you know, much bigger moon base, much more moon base activity and go. And then as the episodes dipped into tea in the Midlands, the ratings in the United States dropped and they yanked all the funding and they canceled the order for the second series. So that's how that played out. It had to do with the lifespan of the show in the United States 2 years after they were done making it. So, and then there's a whole different story about what happened to Gerry Anderson after that, which
really
we aren't going to tell because that has nothing to do with this show. So let's wrap up the series so that we can put a nail in the coffin of this one and go on. Overall, what do you think?
Overall,
yes.
Series started really great, and at some point it just began to wither.
Did you find the mix between the human drama and the science fiction elements just right to one way or the other?
Overall?
Yeah.
For my tastes, yes, but that's because I go
yes,
back
what?
To what?
You found it, yes.
Well, what I was going to say, but I agree with the assessment that UFO was supposed to be about Shadow. It was not supposed to be about the aliens and all the action of them trying to attack and infiltrate Earth, whatever. It was about the people. And when it was about Shadow, when it was about the people and their responsibility in safeguarding Earth, mixing in with the science fiction element, I thought the series was enormously strong. I enjoyed it. And those episodes, I thought, really stood out. Even though a lot of people, I guess, you know, the producers and the executives at the time.
Americans.
Yeah.
Americans.
And, well, that whole bit about tea in the Midlands kind of thing. I mean, how they were just really berating it. Well, they didn't understand what Gerry was trying to do. They were only looking at the flash, you know, the bang, the wow, the action. They weren't getting down to the heart and the substance of the show at the time. And for whatever reason, the show just it just took a bad turn.
You know, I don't know that. I think you're right. I think that the producers, not the producers, but the executives, perhaps the audience, is not really getting what they expected. But from everything I read, and I'm not saying that Gerry Anderson was trying to pull a fast one.
No, I don't think he was.
But the Andersons, clearly, that what their eye was on was producing serious television. And they'd been producing the puppet shows as the means to pay the bills until they could break into real television. And so they had to leverage that to get UFO made, to convince, you know, the people with money that, hey, here's some people who can make these type shows that are kid shows that we want to see and adventure shows. And they had something very different in mind. You have to think that they probably, were shrewd enough in the television game to know that they had to pitch it for what the people thought, because television is amongst many other things, it's very conservative.
Yeah.
If X type of show is working, then we will make X type of show.
Oh, absolutely. Executives are all about formula.
So they're expecting exactly a Thunderbirds with live action people.
Yeah.
And clearly the Andersons were not intending to make that show and didn't, or tried to break that mold. And so in a way, the executives can be forgiven. I think, well, you know, this is not what we actually expected to get from these people. And they knew that. They knew that wasn't what they had expected. I think they were probably expecting it to wow them. So it's like, you know, hey, look what we can do. But you know, when you've got a lot of money riding on it and you're going to behave conservatively. And that's, so the Andersons are a little bit at fault, I think.
A tiny bit.
But
at the same time, it would have been nice if there had been at least someone there that had a little bit of vision that could kind of get a sense of what it is that the Andersons were trying to do.
Maybe their plan was as well-defined as the aliens' plan.
Which means it wasn't.
Yeah. And I think when you say vision, boy, did they need some vision in lining up what the aliens were going to do. Because I think that's my biggest complaint about this series, is that from week to week, the aliens are trying to destroy us. The aliens are trying to mind control us. The aliens are more concerned about killing Straker.
Well, but at the beginning, there seemed to be some kind of consistency. It wasn't until the quality of the show did its strange turn that all of a sudden we began to question the motives. The series is like the entire House of Cards of the series just crumbled all at the same time.
Whatever happened to the episode? Well, it's the one where Straker's son is killed. So we're spending more of our time concerned about the drama with Straker's son. But remember, that alien appeared to be trying to defect.
Right.
And we got nothing. There was nothing else that ever led us to another piece of that puzzle.
Because it wasn't about the alien.
And yet that's such an important concept. It's like that could have really driven the plot forward against the entire... It's like that means not all aliens are on board with the plan. It's not a monoculture.
Right.
It's not a...
No, it's not a hive mind kind of deal.
The episode where Foster teams up with the alien
on the moon,
when
they're stranded.
Survival.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get to see that the aliens, they're just like us, only green, and can't talk.
But they're not bloodthirsty, savage, hunt and kill all human kind of, you know, that's not what they are. That's not their culture.
Go ahead.
I was going to say there is clearly some kind of independent thought between all the aliens, as you said, you know, the one that helped Foster on the moon, the one that was trying to defect. Yes, it would have been nice if we could have seen more of that down the road, and maybe that was initially part of the plan.
Yeah, I would have liked
it. But it never got to that point.
I felt like the balance there was wrong. I mean, obviously you can't have something like that happening every week, but I think those two instances of humanizing the aliens amongst all 22 episodes or whatever it is of the series was probably a little too few. So maybe we needed a little bit more character development on the aliens' part. Maybe we weren't learning enough about them, and so...
Well, that has been one. If there is a criticism, this is one of them, and it starts right from the very first episode, where at the very end of that story, we hear a voiceover from Straker as he's postulating what might be happening on the aliens' planet, what is driving them to do what they have to do, or at least what he perceives them to be doing, and that is harvesting humans. And then he goes so far as to say, if we were in their position, maybe we would do the same. And the first step in trying to negotiate is to understand your enemy's point of view. Even if it's on a small level, just to do that, that's where you start to build bridges. And yet, from then on, Straker doesn't remember any of that. It's like it didn't happen. The series didn't do a very good job at building from one week to the next. There was no real sense of follow through on anything.
No.
I mean, any time they harkened back to another episode was like extremely unusual, like Straker's marriage and breakup with Mary and his son John. I mean, those are just... I mean, John's only referenced twice. No, three times. The when he's born, when we see him die, and then in the clip show we had last week. Those are the only three times we've ever seen any kind of reference with John. Mary, a little bit more.
But I think we got... I think in terms of them, we got more than enough to know what you need to know about Straker.
I know, but...
When it comes to family life.
But the point is that... Any kind of follow-through that took place was solely focused on Straker. I mean, if there were any surrounding characters that had a role in that follow-through, then we would see some of that, like maybe with Freeman. But largely, any kind of follow-through was solely focused on Ed himself, not really so much on anybody else. And as far as Straker's comprehension and understanding of the aliens in general... it's like from week to week to week to week. I mean, despite the fact that, yeah, you had one episode where you've got an alien that saves Foster's life. You got another one who's trying to defect. Well, Straker seems to conveniently forget that the next week. There's a total lack of continuity in that respect.
It's not just a total lack of continuity. The aliens are a complete and absolute stonewall to the audience as well.
We don't learn anything from them.
But we don't have any clue why he was defecting, or even if in fact he really was defecting. That doesn't give us anything. The fact that one of them helped Foster, well, he wants to stay alive.
Yeah.
And that was the only way they were going to do it. Although he didn't actually...
Although there's no indication to say that once their survival was guaranteed that he wouldn't turn around and kill Paul.
Or take his organs. Yeah. Paul, I want your organ.
And as far as the defector, I wouldn't be surprised if he's saying, just get me away from these, these Abbott and Costello kooks. They're nuts.
They were all digging in a basement the other day. Yeah. So we got nothing. We learned nothing about the aliens from episode one. And then
right. And then we actually
the cat alien one.
Not only do we not learn anything, but anything that we think we may have guessed or surmised is then taken away as they continue to baffle us with just the most bizarre motives on the aliens' part. It got increasingly worse. It wasn't so bad in the beginning. There seemed to be some kind of continuity, some kind of consistency in their approach. But at a certain point during the series, it then took a very weird left turn and just kept turning left.
Yeah. I mean, if we had a simple plot of, if I can get an alien to the planet, he can grab some organs and head back to the home world. That's okay. That all worked for me. That's their goal. We desperately need organs. Then there's the, okay, if we can destroy Shadow's defense organization, we can get to the planet.
And we can collect more organs. But it wasn't that.
But once they went beyond that and they started the same plots that just didn't make any sense whatsoever. Let's wipe out all life on the planet. That'll get us a lot of organs.
Yeah.
Oh, contaminated ones. And for how long?
Yeah, it seemed like the desired result of whatever tactic they were using for that week did not jive with the overall mission of the aliens as we had come to understand earlier in the show.
And yes, maybe we got the aliens' motivations entirely wrong. Maybe they weren't there to get organs. Maybe they just needed the organs to do something while they were planning to blow up the planet so they could build an interstellar bypass. I don't know, but
we never found out. Maybe this was something that we were supposed to find out in the second year. Like I said, in past shows, I would have loved to learn if there was any kind of story ideas that Jerry was, kind of sitting on that he wanted to hatch.
Do you know what I would have loved?
During year two.
Here's what I would have loved. You don't see this. So we talk about in the first episode, who are they? What do they come? What do they want? And Straker makes his suppositions that dying planet need the body parts. And then for the longest time, we work on that assumption and we work on it. And then, unfortunately, in just a absolutely bonkers way, they throw that in your face in The Cat with 10 Lives. But I would love to see a show where we are gathering clues and formulating theories and working based on those theories, or I should say hypotheses, and working on those hypotheses, and they get refined as time goes on, as we gather more intelligence, and their original ones were wrong. And so they correct for it, and they keep moving on. But that all of the pieces that they put together have to fit.
Right.
It's like everything we've learned about the aliens has to go into our hypothesis, and it has to fit. Otherwise, hypothesis is wrong. And then we could have been learning about the aliens along the way. We could have learned from, because that's what you do with a hypothesis, right? Is that once you formulate this.
Well, you test it.
You test it or you use it to make predictions.
Right.
So you're making the predictions on the defense of Earth. And when that doesn't work, you go back and go, we refine and we go back. And that would have been good. But because they stonewalled the aliens for three quarters of the series.
We never get a chance. No.
And then they just throw it in your face and go, actually, they're camp people. Or
I mean, they, at no point is there any kind of situation where they can test their hypotheses. They can't create a model by which to predict their behavior. No, it's because they were stonewalling with the aliens. Sad.
Another. I guess they're not going to be making any more of those. Although they have been talking about making a movie for a long time.
Oh, for a long time.
Long time.
And I still keep hearing it.
Yeah, you know, somewhere out there, there's a movie studio that needs them to make a show on the lot of their movie studio. And I wonder if they did that now and they made an actual big budget film and they set it on a movie studio. Would they use the real movie studio or would they construct their own sets?
Oh, like Warner Brothers did with Blazing Saddles?
I don't remember that they constructed their sets of Warner Brothers.
They actually used their own back lot. And then they, at one point they do a pullback and you see how, yeah, it is their back lot. It's something kind of meta. It was amusing.
Anyway, well, listeners, I'm going to say I hope you enjoyed our trek through UFO now that it's done. You could go back and listen to all our episodes talking about UFO, or you could go watch them again, or you could stick with us and find out what the next show we're going to be talking about. And I think that if you put your mind to it, or do a little research, maybe on Wikipedia about UFO, you might be able to figure out what we're going to follow up with on this episode.
Yeah, see, unlike the aliens, we actually did kind of leave some predictable. We had some predictable behavior by which you can use, you know, you can create a model to determine where we're going.
Where we're going to go.
Yeah.
Where we're going to go next.
Yeah, we didn't stonewall you people.
No, we didn't. We have laid our cards out on the table many times in the past, but if you weren't paying attention then.
Well, it's all on you.
It's exactly. Ben, thank you for joining me.
My pleasure.
And listeners, I hope you'll join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Kill Striker.
That's our last time for that.
For the last time.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us, leave us a review on iTunes. Or stop by and visit at our website, FusionPatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Search for Fusion Patrol. Or just drop us a note at feedback@FusionPatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.